Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the city of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Yes, he's in the intensive care ward at Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle.
Welcome, everyone, to your, I'm sure, sorely missed Monday night prospects power hour here with the Plaza Podcast crew. Robbie and I both have our things going on last week, health-wise, family vacation-wise, having good times out of town, all that sort of stuff. And we decided since the Arizona Fall League didn't want to release their rosters quite yet, we would just go back and hit the same topic we were going to do last week, which is taking a good look at this year's top and, well, bottom debuts. The best and the worst of this year's debut class. But Robbie, how you doing? How you feeling?
I feel better. Thank you. I appreciated Jovier saying that I had diarrhea on, which was not the case, but I mean, what are you going to do? Right. The man controls, the account that this podcast is run from, so he can say what he wants, and, good for him. But no, I don't know what it was, as I was telling you, Ben, but it certainly is feeling better. I'm feeling better. But horrific pains that I had never felt before in my stomach. So glad to have had that pass and ready to get back at the topic we were going to dig into a week ago.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I mean, it's not football season for me because fantasy baseball never sleeps.
Amen. So. And this is the type of show where you actually do get into the whole dynasty. You get into, I mean, this is your show to worry about things all winter long, because we're going to be talking about prospects in the Arizona Fall League. We're going to be talking about prospects in Venezuela, in the Dominican, in Australia, and how they're doing and things that we might see from them. This is the show that we're going to talk about that sort of stuff. Plus, we're going to get into, you know, talking top prospects with teams and things like that. But one story, Robbie, that is still finding more legs a week later is Derek Bender of the Twins. Well, formerly of the Twins.
Yeah. Free agent.
Derek Bender now. And I'll be amazed if he finds himself another job.
Outside of the Mexican League.
If you don't know the story, Derek Bender was a sixth round draft choice, something like that. So, second day draft choice of the Twins this year, but not a not a like a sixth round pick that made or got a $5,000 contract to start playing pro ball. You know, so he got actually, I think, right up to or even maybe even a little above
his signing spot. $200,000 for a college catcher. Yeah,
it was just short of $300,000. So I mean, you're talking that's good stinking money, and he was tired with the season, and so he started telling the opposing hitters in a game that had playoff implications what was coming. They teed off, and Fort Myers was eliminated, and he got to go home. Good for him, I guess. But the opposing players, the umpire that night, multiple people kind of ran it up the chain. Hey, this is weird. This isn't a normal thing that happens. And so, of course, you know, it wasn't like they stopped the game and said, hey, this is odd. Now, they made sure they got their win first. You know, let's be real. But they did, after the game, say, hey, this is odd. And the Twins immediately released him. And so from the new, I guess, if you want to say, developments that I've been hearing with the Twins, you know, being in Twins area, there's lots of little tidbits on this story still coming out. It sounds like the Twins intend to pursue a prorated portion of his bonus back.
Wow.
Legally. Yeah. Which, boy, I sure hope he didn't go out and get himself a new car or something, because there's a good chance he's going to walk away with, you know, the paychecks that he earned and 2 months worth of a $300,000 bonus. And so,
it is a crazy story, though, Ben. Like,
oh yeah,
the word from the bullpen and his like his teammates were that he was talking about how he's tired from how long his year has been, and he would just like it to be over. And this was like game day or days leading up. Like, oh man, mm-hmm. You know, like, instead of being re-energized. Boom, nailed it. Because you've just been drafted. You've been given like fair compensation for your pedigree. You're in the organization. They've moved you up to a level that are still playing games that are competitive. So obviously mm-hmm. they want to see what you can do, and you're just dogging it, and you're openly dogging it. I can't imagine that as a teammate. I would hate that guy, especially if I was slogging away all year long to get to where I am. And then this ass clown shows up, you know, with cash in his pocket. And he's like, can't wait for the year to be over. You know, I just want to get home. I just want to do whatever. And then you find out that he's telling the players on the other team, who eventually, I guess it was, they said something to their coach about it, who then, you know, post-game, of course, was like, hey, this is something that my players were saying. And, of course, I'm sure it was like they didn't know if they could believe him at first when he would say, you know, fastball like down the pipe or whatever kind mm-hmm. of, you know, words he was using to describe it. But at some point they picked up on it, talked amongst each other, and then they were really able to do it. I forget what the damage was as far as like how quickly they got on. But yeah, horrific to think that like
imagine being
a professional athlete thought that was fair game.
Yeah. Imagine being a pitcher. The pitcher on the mound, and mm-hmm. you know, it's like the nuclear situation. God, it's like he knew the fastball was coming. He did. Oh
yeah,
wow.
But
every pitch, yeah. And it's like, Jesus. Because I'm sorry, my weekly article that I'm putting together is the guys who led the minors in not good categories. Elijah Green is on this one because he led the minors in strikeouts this year. Mike Vassell of the Met system gave up the most home runs by a pitcher this year. Things like that. Those statistics stinking matter. You know, I went and I was looking. There's one of the guys that I'm looking at, and he had one rough start, and he's got one of the worst FIPs in the minors. But the rest of his starts are all like, you know, four runs in five innings, five runs in six innings. You know, not great, mm-hmm. but he had one holy crap start that was like two innings and 10 runs, and it just ballooned his season. Having an outing like that, especially at the end of the year when teams are really, you know, they're getting folks down to Florida because this was their Fort Myers team down in Florida, getting folks down there, getting ready for fall instructs, probably getting maybe their first look at a pitcher that was probably drafted this year or a Latin signee 2 years ago or whatever. probably their first look at this pitcher, and he's getting lit up.
Right.
And it's like, oh, and wow. Yeah, it's like, geez, well, I guess, huh, I don't know what he's doing, but gosh, it's like they're on everything. Well, then you find out, oh, there's a reason they're on everything. God, that just, I don't know, as a pitcher, I would want to go punch him right in the face. I just, yeah. I mean, just frankly, I cannot imagine. And mind you, he also hit like 200 with like a 300 slugging, and he's a bat first catcher. So he didn't exactly show that he was worthy of somebody stepping out on a ledge to pick him up either, but man.
But I think that's because he just wanted to be done, Ben. That's why.
Well, but, good Lord. If I'm running a Frontier League team next year, I'm not taking a chance on that guy.
Yeah, you're looking the other way when he calls.
Yeah, it's like, geez, like, yeah, I don't think man.
So. Your attitude alone, right? Because even him signing somewhere else would,
you know, that's going to get you publicity. Ammo.
Yeah.
And that's going to hit your papers. Imagine what your fans are going to say. Like, oh, so you're okay with this, huh? Like, right.
Everybody with a kid who brings a kid to the game would be like, yeah, we don't really care too much about Bender and da-da-da. So he'll have, if he's going to ever have a pro career, he's going to have a lot of work to do to be able to get it back. And I don't know how you can really come back from this, because that's just a no-no. So, but one thing that a lot of people, you know, also, you know, turning their backs on Bender, highly touted prospect that a lot of people turn their backs on, has made his debut. And in 7 innings, Mr. Kumar Rocker of the Texas Rangers has 12 Ks, Ben, and a 2.57 ERA. It's been impressive.
Yeah. The slider.
Short, impressive.
Yes. And that's the big thing right now. I sure hope you're not in a spot where you're relying on him to give you valuable innings this week, because I don't think he's going to give you any innings this week. I mean, he's going to pitch this week, but if you're expecting more than, you know, 7 more innings, I think that's fool's gold. But the slider might be the best professional slider I've watched pitch. This is the way Kumar's slider looked when he was in college with Vanderbilt. And then some. This is a better version. And he had maybe a 70, 80 grade slider as a collegian, and then just kind of lost it with the injuries and everything else to where it was a plus slider. It wasn't that level. Now it's back to that holy crap slider. And as long as he gets it near the plate, guys are going to swing at it. And the crazy part is he does pound the zone with it fairly well. That's what really surprised me, is he actually controls that thing and keeps it in the strike zone fairly well. It's his curveball is just off the plate a lot, and he's trying to get swing and miss, and it's not that kind of a curve. I kind of wonder if maybe there's a little play they do with that pitch as his third pitch to make that more of a swing and miss chase type of pitch over the offseason, do a little tweak to the shape.
That could 100% be the, here's what we want you to fiddle with, and in spring training, we're going to go hard on it. That could be that thing that kind of makes it click, makes everything else, right, so much more devastating.
But, man, it's been fun to watch. You like to see guys who take the tough road, and they come back, and they're as good or better than they ever were as a prospect, and he certainly fits that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice. It certainly is nice for, especially for the Rangers, defending World Series champs, who have not had it go well. Max Scherzer on the other end of that, he's done for the year. I mean, whatever. There's no real time left. But for people like myself who had invested in Scherzer in Dynasty, Redraft, Keeper, whatever, Scherzer was a lost cause all year. It was frustrating. The one league that I really needed him at, when he wasn't making it, I made a deal when he was about to come back, and got a few pieces back, and I can't remember the trade off the top of my head, but I'm hoping that pays more dividends. And unfortunately, the team that he went to was a top team that needed pitching, and they never got it out of him. So he hurts. Yeah. I mean, you could say the same about most of Texas pitchers this year, right? A lot of them
most came of in Texas and came out and, this year. I mean, really, it's been a rough year for the Rangers, but but speaking of things that were a little rough, we talked about maybe some difficulties. We had having a little too much fun at the wedding that I went to before the show started here. But C.J. Abrams apparently had a whole lot of fun in at a casino and decided to show like out until 8 a.m, which I will say one of the best lines ever was the Mets broadcast crew, Keith Hernandez, talking about this and saying, well, I can understand 4 a.m, but 8 a.m. It's like, dude, like, really? Spoken like a man with some experience on the issue. But
yeah,
the Nationals sent him down. And what you're hearing around baseball, this is, I've heard this from multiple of the like big national writers. I've heard it from a few contacts of my own. People in the game are really glad the Nationals did this.
Right. Not just letting it go, letting the behavior be the behavior in September or whatever. Yeah.
And I get it. The Nationals are at a spot where next year they could be taking a big step forward. And frankly, Abrams is a guy that they're going to be relying on to be steady next year. Be one of those guys that they don't have to worry about night in, night out. He's just going to go out. He's going to play a solid shortstop, not elite, but play a solid shortstop and give him good speed on the base paths. You know, I think he had 20 home runs this year. I mean, surprising pop for his frame. If you look at him, he looks stick and bones, but he popped out 20 home runs. And yeah, there's something there that they could use. And geez. Well, I guess he's going to spend his last week where Derek Bender kind of wanted to be. So there we go.
Yeah, he's not quite that classy anymore. Unlike Mr. Baseball, Shohei Ohtani, who, I mean, there's no point in saying the stats. If you had Ohtani, as I did in one league where I was still able to play, he kept me in it. And I mean, a 10 RBI, 3 home run, 6 for 6 game, 2 stolen bases. He's a 50 plus guy. I mean, congratulations. We've been enjoying seeing this. The big thing in the off-season conversation for all the redraft people out there, Dynasty Keeper as well. What is going to happen when he starts pitching next year? He's been so good, so amazing. Is it really worth it? That's going to become the new conversation. And then it's going to be, is he going to pitch for 1 or 2 years and then, you know, go back? Like, pitching is more of something on the side. I don't know. There is no position for him to go to with the Dodgers, because they've got a first baseman locked in with Freddie Freeman. So it's not like you can say we can move him to first and get him in every day. You also can just DH him and he's worth it because you just did it. So Ohtani, amazing end of the year. So,
if you're the Dodgers, somebody made a joke about this, but you know, it's not a big joke, but could Ohtani go 50-50-50 as in 50 homers, 50 steals, and 50 saves next year?
Yeah, they wouldn't do that, though.
It's just it. They've invested so much in him. But his stuff, he could be absolutely light freaking out. And they don't have a closer. You know, that's one of the areas where they've really struggled this year. Going into the playoffs, you're not quite sure who's closing out the back door in, you know, in Los Angeles right now. So
a younger, more naive me would have loved that idea, you know, 18 months ago. but now with all the things that have happened within, you know, like the signing and the second TJ and all, like, I think it would be great. But then you have to think about, okay, so if we're thinking of having them close, then
he says that would be insane.
It depends on where they are in the lineup, right? Because he's got to start to loosen up maybe the inning before or do something. He does have time when everybody else is out in the field where he can warm up as well, but he also does advanced scouting probably like nobody else on his team, because he has the extra time on the bench to go through those things, which is one of the big benefits they don't talk about with the DH, is the fact that they get extra time in game to figure out who might be throwing to them and what those pitchers throw and their, you know, how they throw and all the things. So I don't know that it would be a good idea, but man, it would be so cool to see.
It'd be fun.
I mean, I'm for all the things that make that fun, and it would be very difficult in, you know, your Dynasty Keeper leagues. The big one's going to be in the Yahoo, where there's two Ohtanis.
Oh,
and any other place where there are two Ohtanis. What are you reasonably thinking you're getting if you're pitcher Ohtani and they start talking about relief pitching?
Yeah.
You know, like Ely closer, like we're just talking about now, or is it going to be like the six-man rotation that we saw in LA, which, when Ohtani's good, he is damn good as a pitcher. And when he's batting, he's just one of the best in the game.
And yes, I know you're gonna harp on me, you know, with the Braves thing here, but the Braves doing the six-man rotation all year long with Spencer Schwellenbach really stretching out, with Chris Sale having his first full healthy year in a long time, with Reynaldo Lopez moving into the rotation, it allowed those guys to each make 20-plus starts. That, could you imagine if the Dodgers would start from day one and say, we're going six-man, we're going to see if we can maybe get Glasnow to September healthy for once. We're going to hopefully have Yamamoto and Otani. I mean, that would be really, really good.
Yeah. Eddie's giving us a bunch of questions, as well as asking stuff and saying, here's great ideas for future shows, which they are going through August, September, guys that finished strong, talking about sleepers. Mm-hmm. That is a fun, exciting thing. We will definitely talk about guys who we have high expectations for next year at another point in time. Somebody who we used to always have high expectations for is retiring, Ben. Charlie Blackmon has announced that it was assumed, but I mean, after we've seen other guys just not leave, maybe this is for the best. At least he's going out with the Rockies this year and end of the week. He'll 1 week left. Yeah. And he'll be out. A former fantasy diamond,
yes. Charlie Black. And one of those guys that always seems to really be having fun playing the game. I always enjoyed watching Charlie Blackmon play the game because he can be in a major issue. For one, the guy's got the beard that kind of is, you know, he's well known for. But, you know, he just always seems like he's having a good time. Now, part of that is he's from Georgia and went to Georgia Tech, I believe. So
just getting out of Georgia makes him happy? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I'm saying what I see of him is when he plays against the Braves. And for him, that's really a fun thing when he comes back to Georgia. I kind of wondered if it wouldn't be a fun thing for him to maybe sign on for a platoon DH/corner outfield role for a retirement season where he has a chance to maybe win something on his way out, because Lord knows Colorado ain't doing that next year or this year. But
that is the one thing that I guess is too bad, right? They didn't try to put him in that position, but at the same time, maybe it was one of the few times a Colorado front office was like, hey, Charlie, do you want us to consider this? And he's like, no, I want to retire a Rocky. You know, I want to be the guy, right?
I like that comparison that Eddie just put in there in our chat here. That Charlie Blackmon reminded him of Hunter Pence, same type of game and player. That's a great, yeah. And same thing here. You know, Blackmon was built for Coors Stadium, exactly. Line drive guy. You know, I believe he had multiple years where he had 10 plus triples. You know, that big outfield like that. He just pounded doubles and triples into the gaps, and then would go into other stadiums, and that line drive power would actually get out of the field. Really fun, you know, player. So good for him. Congratulations on it's not a Hall of Fame type of guy, but a guy who you enjoyed watching play. And that's, you know, that's all you can ask in life. And certainly I'm sure he's not going to the poorhouse anytime soon with his career earnings. So
no, certainly not. And one guy who won't be going to the poorhouse, but might be going, you know, to another continent, but not before he gets another start, Ben, is my Jesus Take the Wheel pick. Can we cue the music?
We'll delay
because it's worth it. Just wait, everybody.
The problem I don't find it.
Oh no, is it gone? Did he clean it up?
I don't see it.
Did Govea
clean it up? Oh, there it is. I found it. Okay. Here we go.
Jesus, take the wheel, take it from my hands, 'cause I can't do this on my own.
Now, if that was not entertaining radio, I do not know what will be. So,
yeah. The only thing better than that lead up to the intro is the actual player. Jose Suarez, baby. We're going back to the well with the Los Angeles Angels lefty. Last week, he got 5 Ks in 5 innings, 0 ERA. He's back, baby. In the last 2 weeks, he has not allowed a run. Looking at the game log, who was it? Houston Houston, and I think this week he might be taking on Houston. No, I don't know who it is this week, but it doesn't matter because he's 1% rostered, and he seems to be better. He could finish the year with an ERA under 6, which would be a big improvement over last year's 8.29. Oh, man, it's been rough, but this end to his year is a great sign because he's not old, and he'll be a final round type pick in your 50-man, you know, draft and holds and all that kind of stuff. Suarez with the Angels might not be out. He might be towards the outs. And this, to me, Ben, is a guy who, even if this start goes, you know, terribly next year, whatever, the Angels might not want to pay him depending on, you know, what they're going to do with the rest of their money this year. I don't know where he is as far as making serious cash. He'll be an under $4 million guy, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But they might say, no thanks. We've seen enough of this up and down. We're not going to do it. And he might find himself as one of these KBO Eric Fetty types who goes over, spends, you know, a season or two really like honing his craft because he was once upon a time of use for the Angels not too long ago. And he hasn't had that devastating injury that we've seen with other guys where it's taken away what they can do. So Suarez could help you this year, help you this week, finish that season strong, and then drift off to the KBO. Or, I mean, the Blue Jays are always up for ruining pitchers. Maybe they'll take them next year. If the Angels don't, of course, or if they do release them, if they don't release them, I can't imagine they want him as organizational depth. But no. Jose Suarez, Jesus, take the wheel pick this week.
The Angels this weekend, or this week, 3-game set at the Chicago White Sox.
Oh, right, White Sox.
And then they come home for Texas.
Okay, so he is starting Wednesday, so that's going to be against the White Sox.
Yep, there you go. So that should be a solid. I mean, he might be able to be the guy that gives the White Sox their 121st loss.
Yeah, which is just horrific. That'll be a good, like.
That's a fun offseason topic there.
Yeah, the trouble is that they also had a couple good pitchers this year, and it just goes to show how important a lineup is in baseball. And depth, because they didn't have either, and it really cost them as the year went on. All right, Ben, we'll move on now to our main topic for tonight, which are the debut players of 2024. We counted up 200 and something of them. We're going to rhyme off a bunch of them. We can also just hop down a list and just kind of say a name of like, oh, yeah, that guy. Oh, yeah, that guy. But I also set up a lineup of guys who I think were premier debut men as well as dud debut men. And this is really for the dynasty keeper guys out there who are thinking the guys I want to go for next year are these players. Cause when they debut, they're going to do these great things. And there's a lot of guys on both sides of the list that were top 25, easily top 50 prospects at the start of the year. And then at midway points in the year who then debuted and ended up on one side of this fence or the other. So I'll rhyme off my premier list, and then you can tell me any of these guys who you saw this coming with, okay? Oakland's Kyle McCann at the catcher position. I just picked a lineup, as I'm said, so catcher through. My first baseman on the premier side, Kyle Manzardo with Cleveland. He was once upon a time the Tampa Bay prospect. Second baseman I've picked, and this is short sample. All right, Nick York with Pittsburgh, who was Boston prospect and traded this year. Also former Yankee prospect, became Dodger prospect, became trade fodder with the streaking Tigers. My shortstop pick was Trey Sweeney for third base. I didn't even have a guy, Ben, worthy of saying he had a good debut, you know, season short or long. But, you know, when we get to duds, I got a couple. For the outfield, I picked four because I can, and that's what I'm allowed to do. I got Wyatt Langford, who was a slow burn right beside Jackson Churio. Both guys, Langford obviously got hurt, but Churio slow at the gate. And I think we kind of forgot. He's had a 2020 season at whatever age he is, 14. So great for him. Wise MLB-er to start the year, Jackson Merrill. Another great debut guy right there. He did multi-position eligible guy. I think he's settled in the outfield. I don't remember right now. And then James Wood is my final guy who second half of the year came up. And after so many others had come in and disappointed, Wood started slow and has been better. But because he started slow, I think a lot of guys are like, oh, that's it. Wood also can't do it. Wood's another one of them. And then people kind of forgot and started looking at football and other such things, which I can't understand. But Wood's finished strong. So it's an interesting lineup. I don't have a third baseman. Is there a third baseman?
He had kind of a weird Wood, to me, had kind of a weird where he started slow. He hit really well starting about mid-August through about a week ago. And this last week, he really hit the skids again. So I don't know if that's just it's a long season and he's ready to be done or what it is, but just that one caught my attention because when we get into it, in fact, I'm going to share this with everyone just so they can see. If you go on to on to Baseball Reference, they have an entire page. Go to their main page. You go right here. There is the recent debuts, and they have all of these listed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we mentioned there were 248 right down here.
Okay.
But you can also go by their WAR for the season, which, you know, Jackson
Classic
Merrill.
Fantasy stat.
Which, yeah, it does.
All those war leagues out there.
But it does tell you if a guy's giving you value, he's going to get a shot to get more playing time. If he's continuing to give you, like Merrill, holy crap, played a heck of a, you know, center field. And it does look like, according to their thing here, he played only center field this year. So that's another kind of thing into the pocket for Merrill. 24 homers, 16 steals, Trujillo's 21-21. You know, Langford went 13-16. I guess, you know, Keith played second. I was just looking to see who he'd have be your top third baseman. Might be Connor Norby, which,
yeah, okay.
Yikes. You know, but he's
worthy of getting on. Not that Kyle McCann was like some stud, but McCann had a really good stretch with Oakland for a while this year.
Oh, yeah.
Of who the hell is this guy and should I pick him up?
Oh. For frick's sakes, Joe.
Joe, I play in a war league. Oh, my God.
He drafted the USA first overall in a war league. Oh, man.
Russia's a sneaky second pick, and North Korea in at third? I mean, and never count out Germany.
I mean, well, in Israel? I mean, come on right now. We're exploding pagers. We're, you know, all
they
sorts
refuse
of
to lose. They got that can't quit attitude.
Man, we're going to just like fall off with viewers in like 2 seconds here.
Getting into political war jokes. Yep. Okay, so I'll rhyme off the duds because there's more names that I think people, well, not they're equally names that people will understand.
Yep.
More of a surprise that he had his debut this year, but Ben Rice, who after last year was one of those, he's going back in your, not first year player drafts, but in your available pool of rookies that were undrafted, lowly rostered guys. Nico Cavadas, former Red Sox, now debuted with the Angels. And it's not that he has been terrible. He just hasn't been good in the short time he's been up. This is more my long play complaint. Colt Keith, as I told you, Ben, before, he's on the dud list this year because if you had him in April, May, and June, you cut, traded, did benched him, demoted, whatever you could to not have him in your lineup. But you kept wanting to. So even when he started to play well, he became kind of frustrating. Like, is this a streak? Is he now better? What's going on? So he's on the dud list. Jackson Holliday on the dud list, you know, a top, whatever, 1, 2, 3 prospect, whatever you want to say. He just did not have a good debut season this year. Teammate Kobe Mayo, same thing. Nacho Alvarez with Atlanta, who I thought was more of a surprise to be up in the first place.
Yeah.
But when everybody gets hurt, that's, you know, that's what happens. Jonathan Clase, who debuted with Seattle, was then traded to Toronto, is now up and playing with Toronto. The reason why he's on here, I know expectations weren't overly high for him, but he was on some prospect top 100 lists. One of the things I thought he really brought to the table, that he still can, I should say, bring to the table, is speed power. And in Toronto, the speed should be the big one for him that's going to be able to play. The problem is that they need outfield space for him to be able to play. So the debut season wasn't great. You know, Joey Lopresti could have also been on this list, but he, I don't know. For me, Class A was more of a disappointment because the time he came up with Seattle, they needed a boost. And like DePoto was like, he's up because he's a dynamic player. He can do these things. So I expected to see some things with Class A that I did not. So I thought he was more of a disappointment. Also, Victor Scott, remember how excited everybody was this offseason for Victor Scott? And then he just wasn't able to handle MLB pitching. And Dylan Cruz, who came up, I mean, he was drafted a year and change ago, but there are other guys that are on this list that were drafted a year and change ago who have been elite. So Dylan Cruz, not a great debut season. He makes the dud lineup.
Another outfielder you could have chosen would be Jordan Beck with the Rockies. Like, you know, guy that everyone kind of thought would just be maybe not an elite performer, but one of those guys
consistent. That can
kind of fill up a stat line sort of guy. You know, he's not going to hit you 30 homer and not going to steal you 30 bases, but type of guy that should get you doubles, should get you 20 dingers, should get you 20 steals, should hit for a decent average. Yeah, he's sub 200 batting average, a 47 OPS plus. 47 OPS plus. That's not good. 62 strikeouts in 177 plate appearances. So I think to say that there's some work to do is putting it lightly, especially when Charlie Blackmon just opened up a spot in the potential outfield. Beck certainly hasn't shown that he's the guy who wants to have it.
Well, and we've spent a lot of time this year talking about outfielders with the Rockies. Yeah, so we'll get to the pitchers. Sorry, Tyler Black dud. Yes, absolutely. Joseph's commenting.
That's a good one for the hitters.
Yes. And we do have the same RP. So I'll just say my RPs because it's far less fun and exciting. Hunter Biggie with Tampa Bay is somebody who on the premier list came up. He's been fine. Cam Smith, who's been up all year long, but eventually got, you know, to the 50 inning thing. But he's been just a good relief pitcher. And, oh my goodness, what is his name with Colorado, who was drafted like a year or two ago? Horza Venison, something. I'll have to check to see. But he was another guy who was decent. But the one guy who was, to me, the biggest disappointment of the RP class for, you know, rookies, guys that would debut this year, Yuki Matsui with San Diego. Because there was talk of, is he going to be like a closer? Is he going to be an eighth inning guy? He's definitely a save hold guy. Like, you need to get him as a save hold guy. And he just has not been productive for you. Halverson, there it is, with Colorado is the other guy. Seth Halverson. So in 9 2/3 innings pitched, he's got 2 holds, a save, 2 wins, 9 Ks. And this is in 9 2/3 innings, 1.86 whip. So I
didn't realize Vognik had debuted last year. I was just going to say, he's a rookie. He's just not a debut guy this year. Yep.
Yeah. So Seth Halverson is the guy that, 3% rostered, 1% started. And I did pick him up in the one league that we were drafting in, Ben. And I thought this is a good flyer candidate because he seems like the kind of guy who should just be treated as an RP, not a we're going to stretch you out and see what happens. Like, you know, RP who can throw in Colorado would be good. So, but for the arms, so there could have been guys we could discuss the list after, but the guys who I think, you know, were premier arms this year, Shota Imanaga, who I think is worthy of a 1 or 2 spot. Reason being that he would be one is that the value on him versus the other guy who's the obvious number one. Imanaga didn't cost you as much, didn't cost the Cubs as much. He seemed like he was overachieving all year, and yet he has not. He has just achieved. He's a top 30 fantasy player in 8x8 formats where you're including more pitching categories because the more categories you cover, the better Imanaga gets for you. The other guy's Paul Skeens. That's the obvious other one who was drafted a year and change ago, similar to Cruz here. Or no, was Cruz 2 years ago? No, Cruz was last year.
Yeah.
I think, Cruz was last year. So we got Skeens, we got Imanaga, we've got Rhett Lauder, who just debuted also last year draft pick. He's started well with Cincinnati. Oh,
really well.
Yeah. Quietly, I would say, because Cincinnati just debuts so many guys all the time. Jared Jones, quietly, nice rookie debut season. And then the other one that I think is my favorite of the list, because again, I'm dumpster diving from a value standpoint and trying to get value wherever I can with the most minimal investment. Mitch Spence with Oakland, the Rule 5 pick, started the year with the big club, did not start in the rotation, but has since become a regular, and I think will continue to do so. So he's a value pickup. Now, there were two other guys I was considering here, Mitchell Parker with Washington. His line has been fine, but it has not been of the, I mean, Mitch Spence is the SP5 of that crew I mentioned. Mitchell Parker is a knock less. He doesn't have the K per nine. The career longevity doesn't look like it likely will be there because of certain, you know, other factors within his arsenal. But the one guy who I think is worthy of both lists, but I put him on the dud list, is Spencer Arrigotti. Arrigotti started horribly this year. So bad, I was positive he would get sent down, and then he did. And then he got brought back up, and he wasn't a whole lot better. And I think it was an 11 strikeout. We'll call it the break. That was his breakout game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was where it was like, okay, this is a serious K per nine machine. Like, this guy can get out good major league lineups. And then he's just been up and down, but he's been pretty solid the last month. And I can't imagine a world in which Houston doesn't have him in the top four of their rotation next year, assuming no injuries, of course. I think Arrigotti is a good-to-go regular, and the stat line will only show good K per nine. And I can't remember what his quality start number is. I think it's – I don't even know if it's double digits, but it can't be over 12. He's a value play to get this offseason, because if Houston can be good, if Houston can get more of those ground balls, Arrigotti could easily be on this version of the sophomore list next year.
They're going to have a really interesting offseason to figure out their rotation. Framber Valdez maybe had his best season very quietly. Very, very solid season start to finish. Nothing really flashy, but a very good year. Hunter Brown has developed into a guy that you want to, you know, is going to be in your rotation. You still got Verlander sticking around. But then you get guys like Christian Javier back from injury. Yeah. And, you know, they're going to have some interesting things to figure out next year in that rotation. Good problem to have, you know. Boy, wouldn't the Dodgers like to have too much depth in their rotation? But, you know, that's
Yeah. It could also be an opportunity for Houston to make a trade that's like our favorite baseball trades, where it's like, solid baseball player, pitcher, whatever, for, you know, good positional return player, right?
Like a Pablo legit Lopez, Luis Urias.
Yeah. Like
that make, was a really a, good for both teams type of yeah, trade.
Make a deal that makes sense for the lineup at the big league level, not the dollars and cents and whatever. But yeah, Arrigotti on this list on the dud side, but like underline, like very happy where I had to have him in fantasy and certainly be looking to get him this year. Or this offseason. The two guys that I thought were the biggest disappointments were, of course, the ones who I had fantasy value put into. Caden Dana, and this isn't his fault, not at all. This promotion was too soon. And Ben, when you were talking about it earlier in the year, I was kind of like, man, I hope not. I hope he doesn't get called up.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not ideal for him. And he came up and had a good debut and then showed that he wasn't yet ready for it.
Every start he had showed he was still a minor leaguer. That wasn't he wasn't ready to call his own pitches a second and for sure a third time through a lineup, but the pitch calling for him was absolutely atrocious. A lot of, you know, you want to set up a guy off of his best stuff right off. And with Dana, his best stuff is controlling the ball low in the zone with fastballs and changeups and then dropping in breaking stuff on you. And he can locate the breaking stuff up and down in the zone, which really can mess with a hitter. If you get a slider up in the zone, that, you know, as long as you're not hanging it, if it's an intentional slider up in the zone, that is a really crappy pitch to try and make any decent contact on. All you're going to basically do is pop that thing straight up in the air. I was really disappointed with how they handled Dana, but I think that he didn't show out the way that you wanted him to. How much of that is on him? Yeah, it's a good question.
This is the Palazzo Podcast. Up next after the break, Ben reveals his top 1,000 Atlanta Braves prospects in order.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here, do I sound better now? Did my mic change at all?
I guess I thought you sounded fine, but you know, we also know that Ben's ears are not the greatest right at the moment.
Yes, that's right. I was just thinking, I'm like, I feel like I'm missing a plug-in on my computer. This is how technologically savvy I am. I feel like I'm missing a plug-in on the left-hand side. And I just like looked over at my mic and I'm like, I don't see my blue light. And I realized that I must have unplugged it before we started recording, as I was trying to adjust something else. So anyway, I'm back and I'm part of the conversation. The other guy's Carlos Rodriguez with Milwaukee. Now, he was poised to come up and just become a rotation arm. You know, again, he was a popular pick a year ago as to this is a guy for next year's rotation, which is one of the reasons why you always need to be careful when people are like, hey, this is a logical spot or this is a logical arm for next year, logical prospect to, you know, make progression or whatever. Not that you should walk away from any of the guys at the double A, triple A level, or the guys who are dominating in double A and are ready to move up to triple A. But for Rodriguez, his whole year has been really bad. And when Milwaukee was devastated by injuries, they looked to him and he wasn't able to give them even, you know, like overachieving or bailed out from making a massive mistake, right? Like he wasn't able to just limp through something, as you've heard before about pitchers who have off days and they kind of use their B stuff. And Mark Burley used to talk about it a lot, how when he wasn't at his best, he knew he had to battle. And Rodriguez was not able to battle with Milwaukee to get anything really cooking for himself. So I don't know if this has hurt him long term. I don't want it to, of course, but I think he's going to need to come out at Triple A next year and just be a dominant pitcher who's like, I am ready when the call comes, you know, May, June. And we also have to see what Milwaukee's going to do, because they took two what I thought were poor veteran pitchers in Colin Ray and stupid Wade Miley. And Wade Miley was effective until injury, and Colin Ray is still pitching in the rotation right now. And that is a credit to their staff, their management, for being able to identify talent with those guys when I would like to absolutely burn Wade Miley to the ground. And with his injury and hopefully his MLB career over, there's still going to be other guys that Milwaukee might look to next year. So,
and Eddie is sending us a thank you that he's enjoyed Monday nights this year and thanking us for our advice all year.
Thank you, Eddie.
Eddie, thank you as well. Always good to have folks in the chat so we have somebody to bounce things off of, not just us, because, you know, otherwise we get sick of listening to us, you know. And Adarsh apparently thinks you're fun, so I don't know.
Yeah, I am fun, Adarsh. Also, Adarsh did put up a comment earlier about, did we figure out what happened? So, Ben, we have this beautiful buffalo chopper at work. Do you have any idea what that is? Anybody out there know what a buffalo chopper is? Put it in the comments, bleep bloop it, if you think you know what it is. And I'll explain that it has this big metal top that goes on it. It has this bowl that rotates underneath. And then it's got a chopper, da-da-da-da-da. Oh, so you put in something that's cooked, chicken, meat, you know, ground beef that's been like a burger, let's say. And then you turn it on and it goes through and it takes your burger and it makes it into ground beef. And the more the longer you leave it in, the finer it gets. Well, anyway, they used this machine at work on Sunday. They took it all apart, brought it to the dish pit, which you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to hand wash all the small parts. Now, the fun fact, that's going to come back in the story in a moment. We went to set it up today because we needed to take the chickpeas because we're making falafels at work, because we make things from scratch. And we had to fix this batch of falafels.
Yeah.
And when they went to put it together, they couldn't find the knob that the double blades attach to. So you got to put the knob on the... So anywho, like nine of us tore the kitchen apart looking for this thing. And then our executive chef came in. And I said to him, yeah, you know, we couldn't find the thing. And but at the same time, we're like, it's in the garbage. Somebody threw this thing in the garbage. So I emailed everybody that worked yesterday, including DJ Adarsh, and said, hey, who touched it? I need to know the chain of events, right? Like, where was this thing last seen? So we've got to the point where the only person that hasn't got back in the email chain is the person who has been blamed for being the last one with it, which is that it got taken from from use, put into the dish room, it got washed, mm-hmm. it got put away on the drying rack, and we're waiting for the person who was supposed to put everything away to email me back and say, this is where it got set. And I hope that they email me and say, it's set in this random spot that makes no sense. But because they haven't got back to me, I don't think they have a good answer. So, yes. And Adarsh, I think you're in at 8 tomorrow. So I do fully expect that you will just be hand chopping everything that would go in the Buffalo Chopper if we can't find it. So, but anyway, so that's the good off topic. So that's the Buffalo Chopper, which we could call the MLB for some of the guys who did debut.
This is true.
Yeah. So you were top talking performers list, Ben. Yeah.
You were talking Carlos Rodriguez and you brought up a lot of these guys. I went through and kind of picked off the guys who had the best baseball reference version of WAR.
Yep.
And one that really stuck out was a fellow brewer, Tobias Myers. Now, if you don't realize the year that Tobias Myers had, 3.05 ERA in 130 innings. A 119 whip, 120 strikeouts and 36 walks. Very solid year. 25 games, 24 of them starts. A little home run prone. He's 18 home runs in those 130 innings. But, I mean, that's – boy, talk about a guy. If I can imagine that there are 25 teams that wish they had a guy like that pitching in their third rotation spot, let alone that's really Milwaukee's 4-5 all year long, or yeah. Since he really kind of took that spot. Myers, I wonder how many people know this is his sixth major league organization already.
Wow, I didn't know it was that many. Holy crap.
He was a sixth round draft pick in 2016 by the Orioles.
Never give and up.
This is going to be a fun remember some guys. Wow. He was traded in 2017, so the next trade deadline, for Tim Beckham. For holy former God. Number one wow. overall, Tim Beckham. The jeez. Trade that most people will know Myers about. He got to be where he needed to be protected from Rule 5. Tampa didn't have the room for him, and he was traded for Junior Caminero.
Oh.
And then bounced around among a number of teams, the Giants, the White Sox, got released by the White Sox, and then signed with the Brewers and spent last year in their minor league system before then making it to the majors this year. How about that for a path before you finally make your major league debut? And
I mean, congratulations, you know, right?
Like, yeah, well-earned. And the guy's but he's 26. So it's not like he's ancient and this is going to be his only year. He could still have a 5-6-year run here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, as Jeff Supon type of run for about 5 years as that kind of back-end starter that gives you solid numbers, nothing amazing, but, you know, a good glue piece on a champion – you know, are a championship aspiring club like Supon was for a lot of years for the Cardinals, sat at the back of their rotation, wasn't elite, but he went out and gave you 5-6 every game and saves the bullpen some. And, you know, a lot of times he was making playoff starts, but Tobias Myers caught my attention just because he is, let me look at the number here. 1-2, he is the third highest WAR for pitchers. Skeens, Imanaga, and then Tobias Myers. That's kind of nuts.
I mean, if you're putting together the list of who would be their third and fourth highest WAR, not that I've ever contemplated making that list in my life, but neither three or four would have been in my top 100 of guys who have not yet debuted in MLB.
Yeah, and Cade Smith ended up being the four. He was technically tied, but just a little bit behind. But now One guy you didn't mention, and you know, I'm sure you just teed him up for me because you know you want me to talk about him. But
yeah,
Spencer Schwellenbach. Yeah,
Spencer let's talk about all the Braves. Okay, I'll see you guys in 10 minutes.
Well, main reason I want to bring him up. Did you know that Spencer Schwellenbach has now moved into the DRS lead for all pitchers this year? The defensive runs saved. Oh. There's a very good chance that as a rookie who only
pitched, he's got Gold Glove.
He very well may get a Gold Glove.
Oh,
is that not? That's pretty damn cool. I gotta say, you know,
he's been useful to that point, right? So he's made the plays.
Yeah, and well, I mean, this is a guy who was a legit. Like, most teams thought of him as a shortstop first because he was only the closer in college. This is his first full season as a starter, and he's doing most of it at the major league level. That's pretty dang impressive.
Yeah.
The other guy on that list that I don't think a lot of people are going to like and or note that he's done this well, and a lot of it is because the fantasy stats aren't pretty, but Jonathan Cannon has a 1.6 WAR this year. Cannon
on a horrible team.
He's on a crap team, so the wins aren't there.
Historically bad.
He is a sinker ball pitcher, so he's not going to rack you up strikeouts. But if you are in a quality start league, Jonathan Cannon has been extremely useful for you this year. I don't know when the next really good White Sox team will be. I don't know if Jonathan Cannon will still be there for that. But I think next year, if you are looking for your last starter on a roto team, you're going to be able to do a lot worse than Jonathan Cannon will give you next year. Just may not be very sexy as far as, you know, like I said, wins, probably not great. Strikeouts, probably not great. But that's a very steady pitcher.
Eddie's asking quickly, what does the White Sox immediate future look like? It's bleak. The one thing that they have on their side is that they have decent enough pitching. Was it Davis Martin? The Crochet. Yeah. You do have Cannon.
Sean Burke has looked really good. And we'll get to see more Sean Burke down in the Arizona Fall League, too.
You've got guys. You've got possibilities. And then depending on what they want to do with their big prospect guns, it's just that it's not the smart thing to do now is to go and do what Kansas City did for years and years, which is go and get $4 to $7 million veterans who aren't going to hurt you instead of trying to go and get $20 million guys where you don't have a team to fill around them yet.
Yeah.
You know, like Moncada has hurt your organization, not to his fault, injuries and things like that. But he's, you know, because you want somebody at third base, you want somebody stabilized in positions. They need to get that. They need to get a couple of 2-3 year contract for veteran guys who ideally can start to get pushed out as prospects have earned opportunity, but they don't have those guys right now. So they're going to need to find them in free agency. And that means I'm sure this day and age, I said $4 million. They're probably $8 to $9 million a year guys. I mean, hell, if Kevin Kiermaier was getting $10 million 2 years ago, you're going to be spending that kind of money on multi-year guys, but it's worth it to that organization. You should never want to look a 100 loss season again if you are the White Sox. The goal is to not lose 100 games next year.
And this is where I think they are doing it. God forbid I say this. I think the White Sox did their off-season trades smart in that they built up a ton of depth and really high-end pitching talent. If you look back, yes, the Braves got Ronald Acuna. Braves got Austin Riley out of that. And then they did draft in the midst of their rebuild and get good again. They drafted a Michael Harris. What really helped the Braves in all of that system, you know, and is the guys they got in trade or, well, actually it was trade for them, but free agency or trade offensively are the guys that did something for them. Because what they ended up having is they had so much pitching depth, they could toss aside a guy that didn't quite make it, put him in the bullpen or plug him with four other guys into a trade for Matt Olson, for Sean Murphy. And that's really what the White Sox need to do. They can just kind of sort through and go, okay, who's our Kyle Mueller? Who's our, you know, pick your, you know, you know, Roiber Salinas is another one, a Braves guy that went to Oakland. Yep. You know, these guys like that, where they can show some good talent, but they're just, they're not going to fit in what we have planned. So we can turn that guy into our starting third baseman for the next 6 years, you know, instead of going out and paying high-end free agent prices, especially for pitching, developing that pitching in-house. And they went out and they got, you know, arguably the best looking pitcher out of this year's draft in Hinton Smith. They're going to have a really good pitching development system on paper. Now,
yes, yeah,
you have to get those guys to the majors. You got to get those guys to stay healthy and produce at the majors. But, you know,
the Braves, at least you have guys, right? There are organizations like Toronto who do not have guys.
And that's just it. You bring up and eventually you pop out a Spencer Strider and you pop out a Spencer Schwellenbach out of the 11 guys that they've tried over the last 2 years. You know, you're going to have, you're going to hit on, if you get 1 in 10, you're doing really darn well, but that 1 in 10 fills your rotation. And
right.
That's huge. And that's what you need. And then maybe one or two of those other guys turn into good bullpen pieces and you just figure out how to get the others onto an Oakland, you know,
but there are teams who are going to be turning the page for a year, right? Who, you know, in 10 months, they will not have achieved to that point in 2025 what they wanted to. And if the White Sox have done a good job, there will also be teams like the Pirates who just make a trade that they think make them better today and tomorrow, where they took from Toronto, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. They gave up some prospect for him. Mm-hmm. So if you're good in the offseason at sign, and that's why I kind of said 2 year guys, 2 year veterans, not one and dones, because you can do the one and dones, but then you're doing what Washington's been doing for, you know, whatever, 2-3 seasons of trying to catch that lightning in a bottle, that Jesse Winker, which they did, right? They successfully got Winker. Yeah. But you could also do the 2 year idea where you have a higher floor. And I think that's more important for Chicago, is to have some, like for the White Sox, to have guys who are going to be able to be, you know, on a bad week, a 200 hitter, and on a good week, a 320 hitter, but realistically a 240 type hitter who will, you know, knock guys around and do some good things, not lightning in a bottle for a season guys, or lightning in a bottle for 6 weeks or whatever. You want to just really bring up your floor as an organization, as a lineup, so that you've got good support. And then you don't have those four prospects that are just like ready and waiting. You've got guys, but you're going to need some guys to really perform higher than they have to this point. So it's a rough one for them. But anyway, that's debut stuff for next year. So I'll throw the other names on here, Ben, if you want, and then you can touch on anybody else just from the performing. So you got Skeens at 6, Jackson Merrill, you mentioned Churio, Imanaga, Langford, Tobias, Cade Smith, Spencer Schwellenbach, Mitch Spence, who I talked about before, Jared Jones. First mention of Yamamoto on the night. Now, that's, of course, because he missed so much darn time this year. But when he's been back, he's been good. It's just that he's making so much money, it kind of like makes him a wily veteran versus a guy that actually did debut in Major League Baseball. So Cannon, who you mentioned, Louder, I discussed before. Valentin Belozo, Ryan Fernandez, Colt Keith, James Wood, Porter Hodge. I guess I forgot about Porter Hodge.
Yeah. That's a guy. Good one for the RP.
Yeah, Brant Herder, Langdon Knack, Landon Rupp. There were like Wobolowski, whatever the guy with the Dodgers was,
just also wait. Came up. He's in the other end of things.
But who you would think, oh, they were okay, right? No. That's where you can get into the worst performance, which we'll go to. But yeah, anybody else here? Hodge obviously is somebody who I definitely forgot to mention. And then I did mention what's his nuts from Colorado, Seth Halverson who has definitely been a September help here.
And there's a lot of guys. I capped that at guys who gave you at least one WAR on the year, who had at least one WAR. There's a lot of guys in that 0.5 to 0.9 range.
Reese Hines would be
one. And a lot of them are relievers. There's a ton of relievers in that group where, you know, they pop up, they give you a really solid year. I can't tell you what you're going to get next year out of them, because that's the life of relievers. So here's one for you, though. Colt Keith, we've talked about him. I brought this up because I thought, you know, I don't think it's really been even that it's been a good half season or even anything like that. Okay, so in May, he hit 343, but it was pretty empty. 343, 388, 493. So it was pretty much batting average, and that's yep. about it. He was a monster in July. 322, 404, 644, 7 home runs, 3 triples. And on the season, he has 13 home runs. He had 7 of them in July.
Wow, that's a peak month right there. Jeez.
That is all he has. And since then, I mean, batting average hasn't been bad, 264, 290, but strikeouts are through the roof again, and 2 home runs in August and September combined. So
I wonder if he hit a dinger the day that Govier and I saw him when they played the Dodgers.
Very well could have.
Yeah. Because I forget, Govier kept getting, he'd stand up and he'd be like, okay, this guy's up. This guy, I think this guy, and then he'd be like, oh, that's not even him. Oh, I'm stupid. That's the wrong guy. And and it was somebody that hit a home run where he did that with, and I forget, he looked over at the board and was like, oh, that wasn't him. But it was some, you know, Detroit guy who was all jacked about it. It was your guy.
Oh, Justin Henry Molloy.
Henry Molloy, who's not on here.
No, he's kind of in that middle group.
Yeah, of the forgotten debut guys.
Not great, not bad. I think he's got 8 home runs on the year, but he hit about 200. Really good walk rate, not so great. But yeah, that's, oh, let's see here. Let me see. That's a good one. Joe mentioned that.
Thank you, Joe.
I wanted to bring that up.
So I almost put Jung Ho Lee is the name he mentioned with San Francisco. I almost put him on my dud list, but I thought, you know what? He didn't get enough time to truly earn dud worthiness, and he's not underneath our top or worst performers. So Jung Ho Lee was a guy who came over this year, leadoff hitter for San Francisco, and he did not start well. He had a couple isolated games, I believe, prior to his shoulder surgery, but he's supposed to be a contact hitter who makes a single into a double and has a ton of singles on top of that. And he never really got the opportunity to play in like good weather. And as the team rolled, you know, in and out, he didn't get that ebb and flow. And I feel like he is going to be somebody that no one cares about next year, because they're going to move on to the next, you know, 4 guys who come from Asia and all the new wave of sleep or whatever. But Lee to me would be the definition of a 2025 sleeper and a dynasty pickup target, because people paid, especially if you do first year player drafts or prospect drafts in general, he would have been a very high first round pick or top 20 pick for sure in any of your leagues. And Imanaga may have been picked after Lee.
Yeah.
And if you've lost Lee, if you've lost Lee for a year, you might be like, well, what can I get? And if you offer league average something or other that's got 20 home run pop, you might be able to get it. And that could be a guy who could have, you know, 180 hits next year if the Giants are rolling through that lineup, right? If your 7, 8, 9 guys are always getting out and your 4, 5, 6 guys are always striking out, it's hard to get your 650 at bats. But this could be somebody who had, prior to the shoulder surgery, the ability to hit the ball and then enough wheels to be able to get, you know, some okay OBP. But yeah, he was a big miss for Dynasty specifically this year. I don't know if he got really high up in redraft stock, like if he was a top 150 guy.
Still like a 4th or 5th outfielder still for most drafts. I don't think the hype really got built that much. One guy that's kind of, you know, we talked about that middle area where they're not among the best, they're not down in the bottom. Govier's guy, Adrian Del Castillo.
That would have been a good one.
He had almost a 900 OPS in 25 games, 4 home runs. What I heard recently is that he went back down. Main reason he's not up right now is they're making a playoff push, is he's a bat first guy. And very likely next year, if Moreno is healthy, having a bat first backup will be fine. But Moreno,
That was San Francisco Giants plan this year with oh my goodness, what's his name?
Bailey?
No, not Bailey. Oh. They signed the guy that was with Seattle for a few years and originally with Colorado.
Murphy?
Thank you, Tom Murphy.
Yeah,
Tom Murphy. And Murphy, I don't know what the hell happened to him. He never came back from an early season injury, but he signed a 2-year deal to be a bat first backup after having his career. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking he'd be like a slow burn Travis d'Arnaud for a few years as a veteran. But Arizona's got a good catching setup. It looks like.
And I think that would be, I mean, I'm trying to pull this up because, you know, I love when my computer, you know, love talking through computer stuff as we're trying to make, you know, a podcast here. But Christian Walker, yeah, that's exactly what I thought. He's a free agent after this year. So there is every possibility that Del Castillo could be working his way into more playing time simply through if they go out and they get an El Cheapo, like a Rhys Hoskins type of first baseman that's going to spend some time at DH. Castillo could work a little catcher, a little first base, a little DH. Joe reminded, you remember the April Blaze Alexander of glory?
I did see Blaze Alexander's name on the debut list. And I'm like, no. Yeah.
Well, and the fun part is, I think, let me see. Didn't his brother also debut this year? Or was that glory? Last year that CJ Alexander?
Oh, I thought it was Glory Alexander, Blaze and Glory.
Yeah, no, they both debuted this year within a month of each other. Alexander with the Royals and CJ with the Royals and Blaze with the Diamondbacks. But yeah, so Blaze ended up the season with all of a 0 WAR, and his brother's under that. So,
well, here I'll say the worst performers here because I want to be able to give Govia at least some time frame for this for tonight, because I definitely am off on some of the others. So for anyone who's wondering, timestamps. The thing Govia loves second most in life is timestamps. First is his lovely wife, Leanne. So the worst performers by WAR mark here, and I mean fantasy related, I think the second guy has actually been the most painful, but I don't think anybody rostered him. Jack Leiter with Texas. Tanner Gordon, starting pitcher with Colorado. Woof. Will Warren, Rodery Munez, Austin Martin. Oh, my goodness, that poor guy. That Nick Nastrini, Kate Povich, Kobe Mayo, Jordan Beck. I remember these conversations. Darrell Hernandez.
Yeah.
Tyler Phillips, Michael Mercado, Victor Scott II, Dylan Dingler, Justin Robledsky. Nailed it. Hurston Waldrop and Adam Mazur, who Mazur is another White Sox arm. Part of their. Oh, wait. Is he out? No, he was in San Diego. Sorry. He was San Diego.
He was in San Diego and then ended up. Now he got traded to the Marlins. And
right. I was so close. I knew he played baseball. So he didn't go. He
played baseball.
He didn't go. I was thinking Thor.
He was in the Tanner Scott deal, I believe.
That makes sense.
Sent him to
San Diego. Yeah. And then everybody was hurt. So Mazur got more time with the Marlins. Yeah. So, but on this list, like there's a lot of guys who I don't think I realistically had expectations for, but there are guys who, I mean, we talked before about like Waldrop potentially coming up and being, you know, I've mentioned a few times, the lightning in a bottle type guy. We thought Victor Scott was, well, not we, but like the industry was like Victor Scott is a safe pick here. Kobe Mayo is going to just come in and be consistent. Jordan Beck, same deal, but a little bit less hype. Austin Martin, everybody was, you know, varied their opinions on him. I didn't really hear much for Leiter, though.
Well, and Leiter has just gotten blown up. I think he got rushed up because they had injury stuff early on in the year, and he had a couple really nasty starts. And so they sent him back down, give him a little more time. And he just hasn't been much better at all since he came back up. So, but like I said, the one that caught my eye on that list that I would have a lot better hope for going forward. I mean, Mayo, obvious.
Yep.
You know, they're
not enough of a sample to really say he hasn't had the 130 at bats of, oh my goodness. Who the heck just got to like a Holiday? I think Holiday's 130 bats,
but Povich, on the other hand, Povich is a guy who gosh, he comes out and he'll put up a 6-inning, 1-run, 7-strikeout start. And then, yeah, the next start out, it's, you know, 3 innings, 4 runs, and he's wonking the building. You're like, well, you know, if you could find a nice happy medium where you're throwing 5 innings of 2-run ball and you walk 2 guys, I think we could all be happier with that. But instead, it's, you know, you come out, you give the 2 ends, and it really hurts on the bad mm-hmm. games. And God, it'd be nice if you could figure out which games you want to do that with, because he'd have really crappy starts against teams that he lined up really well against, and then he'd just dominate a team like the Dodgers. You're like, what the hell? How does that work? But no.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. Like on that list, one of the guys that I would like to see get a realistic shot, but I think it's pretty crowded, is Waldrop for next year.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be, especially with Anthopoulos in the offseason, I could see it. I would love to see him do it. To trade an Ian Anderson and another pitching prospect of some sort to try to make another one of these Chris Sale deals. Maybe the Chris Sale deal this offseason is to Houston. And maybe there's a way to shift Verlander in, you know.
Reed is a free agent.
Right. And I don't think that's a deal they're going to be able to make.
No.
You know,
no.
they've had good luck with other guys that I think this one's out of their hands.
With Sale there, and then I have a pretty good feeling that Charlie Morton is probably done this year. And so, you know, yeah, why not bring in a guy like a Verlander to be your eats up that veteran presence in the bull, you know, in the rotation sort of thing. But the issue being, I kind of wonder if they have the financial room. That's the problem, is every year those contracts for guys like, which, you know, we say this, everyone has technically the financial room. The competitive balance thing for them mm-hmm. is every year those contracts that they gave to Riley and to Acuna and to Strider Albies. And to all those guys and to Albies, they all get a little bit more expensive each year. And that's, you know, you got to figure out how to handle the money around that.
But they do have the luxury, unlike other teams, Ben, to have rookies come up and be effective members of their lineup. And they also are in the rare position that not all MLB teams are, where they can sign veterans for $5 million or less who think about the winning a championship, you know, sign to win. Guys, they've got that, which has become far more same rare. Thing.
Dodgers get that same type of thing. They can get a bunch of guys that will sign there that probably could get more a lot of other places, but they'll go and they'll sign for less money with the Dodgers for the opportunity to maybe win something. And mm-hmm. you know, the other guy that I'm, you know, I will say, here's a name for you for next year if you are looking for that next guy. The Braves in their system have a guy, Drew Hackenberg, who comes from a really good family. I think his brother is a catcher in the White Sox organization. He had another brother who played NFL quarterback, has a sister who's like a all-world volleyball player or something like that. But he went from, I think, even low A ball, but A ball all the way to where he is still spitting seeds at AAA. And it's a guy very similar in profile to what Schwellenbach is doing. A lot of pitches, doesn't have anything that's holy crap elite, but everything's really good when he's on, and he just controls the crap out of it. And he's one of those guys, he can take a little off, he can move the finger position a little bit and shape the ball just a little bit, you know, and just pound the zone and beat a team because they keep making their own mistakes. That's a guy that I don't think he's going to show up on anybody's top anything list, but wouldn't surprise me if he pulls off something like Schwellenbach did this year.
Second round pick 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people thought the Braves were crazy for doing that because they gave him either full slot value or even maybe a little over slot.
So I think it said 19% rostered in your dynasty ones. But yeah, so that's, I mean,
That's the type of guy that saves them money. But yeah. Anyway, yes. Debut wise here, guys, I think we covered the guys that you really need to know. Apparently, Joe's getting into the dad jokes time here. He thinks that Jack Leiter needs to maybe add some weight and get heavier.
But now, if you want to tell jokes, you can always find us at the Palazzo Discord. They keep talking about this. I don't know what it's football. I don't know. There's a lot of chat about that. So if you're interested in that,
you can find it there.
But there is definitely baseball there. You can always find us at YouTube. That's where I want to find you. I want to find you at YouTube. We're over the 850 mark, and I'm going to give credit to the last four people to football. But for the other, 849 of you, you're baseball hungry, and we want that, and we want to get to the 1,000 mark by opening day next year, so that we are monetizing this bad boy, because Ben and I are both looking to go to Turkey in the summer to get hair transplants. That's what we're going for. But anyway, you can definitely find us there. It's Palazzo Podcast on YouTube. And then you can chat. You can dad joke it up with everybody else, or you can also tell us, like, the players, or ask us questions. That's the best way to do it when we're doing it live. As you see, we've got Joe up here. Joe's given us some names of the oldest debut guys. Cam Boozer, obviously best debut name. And then Brady Feigl.
Yeah. So Tyler Ferguson, he's done a little something for Oakland in the bullpen. 30 years old this year. Shota was 30. Uesawa, you remember when he was a potential thing this offseason?
I almost brought him up, but because he signed a minor league deal and then got traded from Tampa to Boston, I didn't want to do it to him. But that's another international relief pitcher type that they were like, well, he was such a good starter for so long. Yeah, but he was not the right kind of pitcher to come over.
Here's a fun one that found his way finally to the majors. Tyler J made his debut this year. You remember Tyler J when he was a Twins prospect, like the fifth overall pick or something like that?
Yeah, we did talk about a few guys who had went through the gauntlet in order to debut.
Sixth overall pick. I was just going to pull up that draft. Let's see. Went Swanson, Bregman, Brendan Rodgers, Dylan Tate,
he's still pitching though.
Kyle Tucker, and then Tyler J ahead of Andrew Benintendi, Carson Fulmer, Ian Happ. Yeah, that was a good draft, actually.
I mean, of those, you see the pitchers are the strugglers in that little class there. The Tate, Fulmer.
Yep.
But they're still throwing.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, but, guys, we're going to be around here all offseason. We may not be every week all the way through. I will tell you, as we get into school season, Mondays are going to be a night that I might need to start working on being available to cover high school sports.
So, well, and we did talk to Govier about finding a night that he can join us.
Yes.
So we can have more sound effects. Because we need his spirit, and he will probably make all of our shows at least 20 minutes shorter. But the same amount of information will be shared, I promise.
That's the set. We might not get into Buffalo Grinders or description for our trips or things like this. But
or
by
how
gosh,
the dish pit looks where I work.
So, but in all seriousness, if there's stuff you guys want us to be covering on this, that's a great way. Get in the Discord and tag Robbie or myself and say, hey, guys, I'm really curious about this. I will tell you, I'm working on setting up. I happen to have a little bit of an in with someone who did some Perfect Game stuff this summer, and we were going to talk potentially with him on what it was like being an athlete in Perfect Game stuff. But beyond that, there's a lot of things we could do shows all winter. But we need to have an idea of what kind of things you guys want to see. So we are going to eventually get into top prospect lists again, but that's probably after the first of the year.
Yeah, that's a new year conversation. Yeah. Just like the big three, next three. That's new year stuff.
Well, yeah, that's more what I meant. The big three. Yeah.
We've got a few things left to go, AFL as well. At some point, they'll have to release the rosters, and we'll talk about how they did. And yes, exactly, Joe. Palazzo Truck Power Hour, baby. I'm in. Okay, I figured it out. All right, are you ready? So I'm going to take a Jeep Liberty diesel, okay, 2.8 liter diesel engine, and I'm going to either body swap it, so remove all of the ugly Liberty. This is the 0506 version, the one after they got rid of the Cherokee. Everybody hated it. The wheel space between is the exact same, 116 inches, as for my 1954 Fargo. So I'm either going to cut off all of the parts of the Liberty that I don't want and just put my truck on it, or more likely, I'm going to take the engine and drivetrain out and move it into my 1954 truck. That's the winter project. Just like rebuilding all of my Dynasty rosters that have collapsed, I'll be trying to rebuild that. But love everyone's thoughts on that for the Palazzo Truck Power Hour. Let's really bring that one up. I like it.
Oh, boy.
That's how you know it's time to end the show, okay? Yeah, and hopefully Govier won't listen to this, so he won't be like, stop it with the truck stuff. But yeah, so we've got a few left before, and I think, you know, Ben and I can talk afterwards about what we want to do before we really like reset for the 2025 season. Yeah, that's right.
Somebody said yeah. Trucks.
As we all know, that's the easiest way to get my attention. It's trucks and baseball. But anyway, so we did the debut this year. For this year, we're going to talk about the AFL, hopefully next week, the start of it, and we'll see what else we can cover that is worthy of your time and ours.
Our man Govier is going to be out at the AFL for First Pitch Arizona at the end of October. And so maybe, you know, I tried this last year. It didn't work out. But we, a couple of years ago, were able to talk to Justin Henry Malloy on here while he was at the AFL. I'm going to try to work on reaching out to somebody while we're down there. And maybe we can have a little live talk with one of the guys that's working things out down there. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and they've got really cheap trucks in Arizona, and they don't rust like they do up north. So if I can get enough points from my wife, I might fly out there. Nothing baseball related. It'll just be collecting info for the Palazzo Truck Power Hour.
There we go. So anyway, on that, but we got lots of ideas here, guys. And so we can definitely keep talking ball all winter long. May not be on a weekly basis, but you'll see us plenty. So hop on the Discord, find us on the Twitter machine, X machine, whatever you want to call it. And let's chat about what you want to find out for next year. Because we're all working on, like Robbie said, rebuilding our dynasty teams, getting ready for 2025 leagues, and we need to know who to know. So that's what we can get into those talks.
Absolutely.
But for that,
sign us off, Ben. Do it.
For my man Robbie, for all of us here at the Palazzo Podcast, Prospects Power Hour, and the non-prospects hour, you know, our other guys that are also doing good work. I'm Ben, and have a good night.
You nailed it.
I nailed the crap out of that one. Yeah.
The power of prospects is a curious thing. Make a person trade everything for a king. Wyatt Langford is your one true love. For a prospect, you'll trade all the It's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of prospects. That's the power of prospects.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.